You're listening to KRUU LP 100.1 FM, the voices of Fairfield, Iowa, and beyond. Grassroots, listener-supported, solar-powered radio broadcasting from the Cultural District in Fairfield, Iowa. This is Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline. And if you're listening to the first broadcast of the show, Merry Christmas 2015. Our guest today has a very special Christmas story to share with us. She is Laura Schroff, author of An Invisible Thread Christmas Story. In this book, Laura Schroff shares the story of the first Christmas she spent with a young boy named Maurice, who she met and befriended on the street months earlier while he was asking for change. The book continues in picture book format the story readers first became familiar with in Schroff's number one New York Times bestseller, An Invisible Thread. Schroff was a successful ad sales rep in Manhattan when she met Maurice, a homeless 11-year-old panhandler. So, Laura, tell us how you came to write An Invisible Thread Christmas Story.
Well, An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, it actually came out it came out in late September, but it is actually a chapter that is out of my original book, An Invisible Thread, and it's chapter 12, which is, the name of it is From the Outside Looking In, and it's about how Maurice spent his very first Christmas with my family.
Okay, so for people, listeners who are not familiar with An Invisible Thread, we should start at the beginning.
Sure, I'm happy
yes.
to do that.
Okay.
An Invisible Thread, first of all, the book came out in 2011, but the story goes back to 1986, when I was walking across 56th Street, and I saw a young boy with his hand out, and as I passed him, he said to me, "Excuse me, lady, do you have any spare change? I'm hungry." And I said no, and I kept walking. I treated him that day as if he were invisible, like most people treated him. But then all of a sudden, what resonated with me were the words, "I'm hungry." So I decided to go back to the boy, and I invited him to lunch, and I took him to McDonald's. And we had lunch together, and we actually spent some time together after lunch. But the entire week, I couldn't get him out of my mind because this happened on a Monday. So on Thursday night after work, I decided to see if I could try to find him. And unbeknownst to me, that night he was very hungry, and he thought maybe if he stood on the same corner, he would see me again and I would invite him to dinner. And as I turned the corner, there he was, standing in the same spot in the same burgundy sweats, the only clothes that he owned. I invited him to dinner. And while we were having dinner, I said to him, "I've got a great idea." I said, "Why don't you meet me on the corner next Monday night, and I'll take you out to dinner again?" And we wound up meeting every Monday for the next 4 years and hundreds of times thereafter.
Wow. Had you ever done anything like this before?
Well, you know, when I would see homeless people on the street, it always would really pull at my heartstrings. And there actually was this guy, Stan, that I used to see every morning on my way to work when I was working at USA Today. And I would buy him coffee and either a donut or a bagel or whatever. But this was the first time I'd ever seen a young boy. Maurice was 11 years old when I met him, on a street corner by himself, panhandling.
Mm-hmm. And what
very, was... very different situation for me.
What was his home situation like?
You know, it's really interesting. We lived only two blocks apart. I lived on West 56th Street. He lived on 54th, yet we came from two vastly different worlds. Unfortunately, he was living at the Bryan Hotel, which was a shelter hotel at the time in New York City. And back in 86, and during that period of time, there were so many people that were homeless. It was almost kind of like a backdrop of New York City. But he lived in a single room that was about 12 by 12 with only two single beds. There was no bedding, pillows, or blankets. And in one corner was a chair, and on the opposite side was a television with a half of a refrigerator. As a child, Maurice could never remember food in the fridge. He lived in that room with as many as 11 people at any one time.
Oh, my.
So he really had no choice but to fend for himself. His father left when he was only 6 years old, and his mother, whom he loved dearly, and she loved him, unfortunately, she was addicted to heroin and crack, and she just was unable to take care of him.
When you hear some about this, you think, well, aren't there programs to take care of people like that?
Well, you know, there were programs back then, and there, of course, there are programs like that today, but there are still those children that fall through the cracks. And the truth is, Maurice really loved his mother. Maurice did not want to be taken away from his family, so he made me promise that I wouldn't be in touch with anyone. So, yes, there were programs back then, but he was a child who kind of had fallen through the cracks.
You know, I never thought about that a child in that situation being aware that if they try to get help, it would probably mean they'd be taken away.
Yes, absolutely. And there's another book called Etched in Sand, and that's another true story, and it's a pretty horrific story. But they, too, did not want social services to know because they didn't want their family to be split up. So it's sometimes these children bear the circumstances because they just don't want to be taken away from their loved ones or be broken up from their families.
Wow. So when you started this relationship with Maurice, did you also have a relationship with his family?
Actually, no. In fact, I would say probably the fifth time that we got together for dinner, I thought it would be really nice to make him a home-cooked meal, so I invited him to my apartment. What I didn't realize at the time was that he was really scared. He really thought that I wanted more from him, and he actually that night came to my apartment with a box cutter in his pocket. And when I sat him down on the sofa and I explained why I invited him to my apartment, and I explained how friendship was built on trust, but I wanted to make sure that he understood that if anything was ever missing from my apartment, we would no longer be friends, he looked at me with this very puzzled expression. I said, "Do you understand what I'm saying?" And he said to me, "Miss Laurie, you just want to be my friend? That's it?" And I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "Of course." And with that, he stood up, he put his hand out, and he said to me, "Miss Laura, deal is a deal." And only once did I go to his shelter hotel. I wanted to take him to a baseball game. At the time, I was working at USA Today. And we had great, great tickets, seats. And I wanted for Maurice to give me permission to, or his mother to give me permission to take him in my car. So I gave him a note, and when he didn't show up with the note, I decided to go over to the shelter hotel. And that was really the only time I ever went there because he made me promise that I would never go back. Mm. Basically, what he said was, nice, classy ladies like me didn't belong in a hotel like that.
Oh.
He's also very embarrassed by his circumstances. So I met his mother. She came to the door. I had never seen anyone so strung out on drugs in my life. And then finally, his grandma Rose came to the door, and I explained that I wanted to take Maurice to a baseball game, and I wanted to bring him in my car, and would she sign this note? And she did, and she then slammed the door on my face, and that was really the only time I ever met them. Actually, Maurice really was very protective. He did not want his family, and particularly his uncles, who were drug dealers, to know where I lived. So I had really no contact at all with his family.
Wow.
In fact, I never met his sisters until the first book came out, An Invisible Thread, and we had our book party. And at the time, I only really met one of his sisters. I since have met his other sister, but it was a couple of years later.
Wow. You're listening to Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Laura Schroff, author of An Invisible Thread Christmas Story and also An Invisible Thread. Do you think his family was aware of his relationship with you the whole time?
Oh, yes, very much so, because as time went. The very first time he had dinner over, he didn't finish his meal. And I said to Maurice, I said, don't you like my dinner? And he said, well, he said, I thought I would bring some home for my mama. And I said, well, you know what? I've got enough. I said, so why don't you finish your dinner, and before you leave, I'll pack up some dinner, and you can bring some food home to your mama. And as time went on, before I knew it, I was cooking for 12 on Monday night. And he started bringing over his laundry, because I had a washing machine and dryer. It just so happened on my floor. And before I knew it, I was doing laundry for the family. So they knew of me, and I do believe that as time went on, they realized that, you know, all I really wanted to do was really help him out. Wow. So, yes, they were very much aware of it. But again, Maurice was fending for himself, and I used to say to him all the time, don't you need to let your mother know that you're still at my apartment? No, it's okay. It's all right. I mean, he just kind of came and went whenever he wanted and how he wanted. It was really quite amazing.
Now, what did your family think of all of this?
Well, my family at first really thought I was a little bit kind of crazy, and my friends thought I needed to be really careful, and my family thought I needed to be careful. But you know what? There was something about Maurice, and I believe it was really in his eyes. And when we were having lunch, I could tell that he was just a really sweet kid who was just stuck in a really hard, bad world. And as time went on, my friends and my family loved to hear my Maurice stories. And I would say probably it was in early November that I actually even invited Maurice to my sister Annette's house on Long Island for him to spend the day with my sister Annette, her husband. And they had three children about the same age as Maurice. And when we went out to Long Island, it was the first time Maurice had actually really ever stepped on grass. And, of course, he thought my sister's house was a mansion. It really wasn't. It was just a traditional house in Long Island. But he lived in one room, and he couldn't believe that they actually had, like, a swing set in their own backyard, and he went for a bike ride with Derek. And later on that night when we were driving back to New York City, I asked him what his favorite part of the day was, and I was sure he was going to tell me that it was going for a bike ride with Derek or playing on the swings. And he said to me, oh, he said, Miss Laura, he said, I love that room. I said, what room? He said, you know, that room where we had dinner. And I said, oh, I said, well, that's called a dining room. I said, why did you like the dining room so much? He said, well, first of all, he said, there was so much food on the table. He said, but I never saw so many people laughing and having so much fun. He said, and you know what? He said, someday when I grow up, I want to have a room just like that. And I realized in that moment that Maurice was starting to dream about a different life. Mm-hmm. Because he always thought when he was 13, he would go into the family business. And that was to become a drug dealer. But he was now starting to see a different world, and a world that he preferred to be a part of. So today, when you go into Maurice's cramped apartment, and he has a really lovely family and a lovely wife, they don't have a living room. They have a dining room.
Aww.
And that's where they hang out. So it was just about a month before Christmas when I asked him what he was doing for Christmas, and he said he had no plans. And I said, don't you do anything for Christmas? And he said no. And he told me how the year before he had gone to the Salvation Army, and he had a really good dinner there. And he actually got to pick a toy out of a bin, and it was a white teddy bear.
And maybe was a good time for you to read from An Invisible Thread Christmas Story.
Beg your pardon, I'm sorry?
I said maybe this is a good time for you to read from An Invisible Thread Christmas Story for our listeners.
Well, so I asked him, you know, if he wanted to spend Christmas with my family. And he agreed. And so that night, so a couple of weeks later, we went out and we decorated the tree together. We went out and bought a tree, and we did his most favorite thing. And he wrote a list to Santa Claus. And it says in the book here, Maurice, I want you to make a Christmas list. so I can give it to Santa, Laura said as he finished eating his cookies. You mean I just write it down and Santa brings it? I asked. That couldn't be true. Well, not everything, said Laura, laughing, but he tries his best. I couldn't believe it. But I wrote my list and put on it a lot of things that I needed, like a new jacket, scarf, and warm gloves. Then at the top of the list, I wrote that I wanted, most of all, a remote control race car. I hope Laura was right about Santa trying to bring me a lot of things. But still, I wasn't sure how Santa would find me. Mm-hmm. And I assured him that Santa was a very smart man. Santa Claus would, in fact, find him. And on Christmas Eve, he came back to my apartment. He celebrated Christmas Eve with my sister Nancy and I. And I gave him one present that night. And I realized when I gave him the gift that it was the first time he had ever received a wrapped gift. Mm. Actually didn't even know what to do with it. He had only received two gifts in his life. Once, when he was a little boy, he received a Hess truck. And believe it or not, when he was 6 years old, his grandmother gave him a marijuana, I guess, cigarette, joint, whatever you want to call it. But this was the first time he had ever received a gift. And, of course, when he ripped off the wrapping paper, he realized it was his remote control race car. Mm. What's also interesting, when we were decorating the Christmas tree that night, he knew all the words to all the songs. And I said to Maurice, how do you know all the words to all these Christmas songs if you don't celebrate Christmas? And he was 11. And he said to me, well, you know, Miss Laura, he said, kids like me, he said, we know everything. He said, but we see it from the outside looking in. Mm. We know it's just not possible. So that's how I came up with the name of the chapter in my original book, An Invisible Thread, From the Outside Looking In. But I remember, I can still get chills from that statement. It was amazing to me how at 11 years old he was able to articulate his life.
Oh, yeah.
He viewed it.
Wow. That remote control race car, that must have been so exciting for him to play with.
It was, but you know, it's really interesting. We went to my sister Annette's house the following day, and we were all having dinner, and you know, another part from the book, we sat down for Christmas dinner. Annette said grace. She's my sister. Dear God, she said, we thank you for all of the wonderful blessings that you have given us, and we thank you for letting us spend this Christmas with our new friend Maurice. Then we had dinner, and then we talked about what we had for dinner. And what Maurice loved the most about his day was, again, sitting at that dining room table and feeling a part of being a part of a family. Mm-hmm. And then we went into the living room, and he talks about how big the Christmas tree was. And my sister's children were all opening up their presents. And then all of a sudden, my sister Annette said, Maurice, you know, what are you waiting for? You have presents too. And Maurice couldn't believe that Santa Claus had actually been able to find him. And he started opening up his presents, and he got a basketball just like Derek. And he got his winter jacket and a pair of new sneakers and his warm scarf and gloves. And he talks about how there was so much wrapping paper on the floor that he could barely see his feet.
Mm.
And what I say to children, and I know it's my book, and please don't misunderstand me. I only mean to be humble because I feel enormously blessed, and so does Maurice. But I'm so proud of this book, and I love visiting with students and going to elementary schools. Now, I've never had a family of my own, and my dream was always to have a large family. And then one day, a blessing came into my life. It was this young boy on 56th Street. And what I say to the students all the time, if we're all just willing to open up our eyes and hearts to our surroundings, we'll never know what's in front of us, but we have to be open to them. And to think that today I am surrounded by children, I can't even believe it. It takes my breath away. And I talk to students about how they, too, can do small acts of kindness, and how all these acts of kindness can actually add up to almost a tidal wave of kindness if we're all willing to just do one. And, you know, some of the best gifts during the holiday season and throughout the year are gifts that really come from the heart. They're gifts of love, they're gifts of time, they're gifts of friendship, and most importantly, they're gifts of kindness.
One thing that, you know, I grew up without much exposure to, you know, I live in a small town. We don't really have homeless people, or at least not visibly.
And where is that?
Fairfield, Iowa.
Okay.
And before, as a child, I grew up in Strasburg, Pennsylvania, which is in Lancaster County. And then we moved to Fairfield when I was in high school. And that's where we're speaking from today. And so as now I spend more time in cities. I spend part of my time in Austin, Texas, and the homeless are much more visible there. And one thing that I try and make a point to do is when I walk past or I'm approached or even along the side, there's a lot of panhandlers at the intersections there, that I actually just try and meet their eyes and acknowledge them as a human being. Because most people don't.
Right. They turn the other way. They play pretend they don't exist.
Yeah.
And even to have eye contact and even just to say hello is an act of kindness.
And it's so easy to do. Mm-hmm. It requires so little of me, you know.
You know, part of the, one of the chapters in the book, too, which is really... What's really not a chapter book, one of the stories, is how, you know, I mentioned earlier on that, you know, when the year before, Maurice picked out a teddy bear out of a bin, a white teddy bear with a red heart. And when we came back to my apartment that night, he tucked this teddy bear under my tree, unbeknownst to me, with a note thanking me for being his friend. And another thing that I tell children in schools is sometimes it is the people who have the least amount that are willing to give the most. He had only one possession in his life, his teddy bear, and yet he was willing to give it to me because it was his way of saying thank you.
You know, I've noticed that people that I know, the most generous are often the ones who have the least. They'll give their last dollar to somebody who they think needs it more.
Yes, and that is always so incredible to me. And, you know, Maurice was also, even at the very young age of only 11 years old, an example of that. He had only one possession in his life, and yet he was willing to part with it because he wanted to give me a gift.
Wow.
And I did I read my book to a little girl that I happen to be very good friends with, her grandmother. Her name is Lila. And when I got done with the book, she said, Laura, I have a great idea. And with that, she ran over to her toy chest that had lots of pillows on it. She took all the pillows off, and she said, I have all these toys. I can give some of these toys away. I said, well, you know what, Lila? I said, that's a very big act of kindness. I said, because some children have no toys, and if you have so many, you can just give away a few, and you probably won't even notice that those toys are missing. So, you know, I believe with all my heart that it's never too early to really talk to children about kindness and to incorporate kindness into their lives. And one of the things in the book that I also love is how in the back of the book, we have we talk about acts of kindness, and you know, something as simple as putting a list on your refrigerator, and just as children have their little chores that they need to do, why not add kindness to it? Mm. You know, and talk throughout the week or at Sunday's dinner about the one act of kindness that they're going to do or that they have done. And, you know, when I speak at elementary schools, after I take the children through the book, I do turn it over to questions, and of course some of their questions are beyond adorable. Then I turn around, then I talk about acts of kindness. And it is amazing to me what some children will say about what they think is a small act of kindness. But all of these things can make a difference and can help us in this pretty brutal world these days be a little kinder.
And I think children actually are kind by nature.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Monica, you're 100% right. You know, children are not born mean.
No.
You know, they are kind. And I was on Kathy Lee and Hoda about 2 years ago with Dr. Dale Atkins, and she talked about how kindness is contagious. And I believe that it is. The more you do it, it makes you feel good, and the more you want to do it. And I tell children this all the time. When you do an act of kindness, it's going to make you feel really, really good. And because it makes you feel so good, you're going to want to do it again. And you're going to want to do it over and over and over again. And you know what? They get it. This one little boy at, I guess it was last week, said to me, you know, the next time I see a kid on the during recess standing by themselves, I'm going to ask them to come over and play with my friends. And I said, well, that's a very, very nice act of kindness. I said, because most children don't want to stand by themselves. And this little boy, Anthony, he raised his hand, and he must have been in second grade. And he said, that happened to me. I said, what happened to you? He said, I was standing in the during recess all by myself, and everybody else was playing, and I felt really bad. And I said, see? I said, that would be a huge act of kindness for someone to have come over and asked Anthony to play. No one wants to be all by themselves. And they get it. They get it. And you can see their little minds, you know, thinking.
Mm. Wow. You know, we just had an interview with Bill Hoft, who wrote the story of Caroline and Ellen Found, who were a mother and daughter in Iowa City. And the daughter, Caroline, that she was killed very suddenly in a moped accident just 12 days before her mother passed away from cancer. So it was a huge, and she was a volleyball star. It was this huge, huge deal in the community, and the whole community really rallied around it. But Caroline's whole thing was exactly that, was in making sure that the kids in her high school who were not included became included. And she had so many. Not only would she befriend them, but she would make sure that everybody else on the volleyball team or the football team would befriend these kids too. And she made more difference in 17 years than most people do in 70, like this author, like the author who wrote about them said. You can make
that must have been. What was the name of the book?
It's Live Like Line, Love Like Ellen.
Oh, I've got to read that book.
Yes. Yeah. It was so touching. So, Laura, when did you decide that you wanted to write a book about your relationship with Maurice?
You know, it's really interesting. People have been telling me, I don't know, I mean, I met Maurice in 1986. The book came out in 2011. So it was a long time. We'd been friends almost for 25 years by the time the book came out. And people have been telling me forever, you should write a book, write a book. And I'm like, write a book? This is just a friendship between the two of us. And they're like, no, you don't understand. This book, people would really love this story. So in 2007, I took an early retirement package from Time Inc. because I spent my life in advertising. And all of a sudden, I had some free time. And I thought, you know, let me try to write my book. So I spent about 6 months on it, and I actually, during that period of time, I had moved to Florida, and then I decided to move back to New York, and I put the book on a back burner, and it really wasn't until 2009 when I pulled it back out again, and that's when I finished it and then realized that I thought I needed a co-author, and his name is Alex Trezanowski, who could help take my book and really make it more visual, because I wasn't a writer. Mm. And that's exactly what he did. He's been the most amazing partner. And the book, we started working on the book in 2010, and the book was sold, and it came out in 2011. Wow. So I have been enormously blessed. And I never could have imagined that my book would resonate with hundreds of thousands of people, not only all across the country, but around the world.
Well, now, An Invisible Thread, A Christmas Story is a children's book.
Yes.
Was the original?
Yes. The Invisible Thread is really for adults, but okay. There are a lot of children that do read the book, but I always say to parents that their cutoff age should be really either 12 or 13. Anything younger than that, I always recommend that the parent read the book first. The children's book is really a picture book. It's illustrated by Barry Root, who I think did an incredible job capturing the essence of our story. And so it's, you know, it's an illustrated book targeting children really 4 to 8, but I do believe that even children as old as 10 would also, 10, even 12, would still really enjoy it.
Now, The Invisible Thread, the book for adults,
yes,
has been, it looks like it's been published in quite a few languages.
Yeah, it's in, actually in 15 languages, and it's been in Germany, which is really amazing. I don't know. For some reason, Germany is really loving the book because it's been on their bestseller list now for 10 consecutive weeks. And actually, this week it even hit number 10, which has really been amazing. So it is, though, in 15 different languages, yeah.
Wow.
It actually hit number 1 once on the New York Times bestseller list.
Well, that's amazing. Did you ever think you would be a New York Times best-selling author?
You know what? When An Invisible Thread came out, I had absolutely no idea of what to expect. All I know is that I never, ever expected that it would take me on the most incredible journey. I mean, it's, you know, part of the core curriculum now. So I do a lot of speaking engagements at schools. I love speaking to students. I mean, students have absolutely stolen my heart. But I also, I'm doing a lot of, you know, speaking at charity events, organizations, corporate events. And, you know, it's really interesting. When I was 25 years old, my mother was 47, and she passed away from an illness. She had passed away from cancer. Mm-hmm. And there's really a beautiful chapter in An Invisible Thread about my mother and her illness and how she passed. But I absolutely believe that my mother has been by my side every step of the way. And I kind of like make a joke about it, but I really do believe it's true, that she like walks around in heaven with a clipboard and she just kind of like checks off the things that she needs to do for the day. Because what's happened with An Invisible Thread, is just amazing to me, and I've been very blessed to have an incredible team. And, you know, there's Maurice, who's a partner not only in Invisible Thread, but also the children's book. I always say from, you know, my mouth to God's ears, a potential movie. Mm. You know, I've been very blessed to have a great co-author, Howard Books, which is really, An Invisible Thread is the book publisher, which is a division of Simon & Schuster. And then the children's book is Simon & Schuster. And they have all been incredibly supportive of the book. I've had a woman by the name of Linda Michelson who works with me and has been for at least 3.5 years. We're cut from the same cloth. So, you know, it's certainly not been anything that I've done on my own. That is for sure. And
a lot of serendipity there.
That it just mm-hmm. keeps going and going and going.
It sounds like you have serendipity in your corner.
You know, I guess I have, you know, I don't know what I have, but it's very funny because my sister Annette and anyone who's read the big book, and even An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, they love my sister Annette, and I understand why. But she's so funny because probably 6 months ago she said to me, I don't really understand this. She said, I think I really need to read your book again.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm like, you know what? I think I need to read it again, too, because I don't really quite get it. But I feel
well, obviously,
amazed
it,
by it.
It touches a chord in people. And I think,
well,
you know, we're hungry for stories of kindness because,
yes.
You know, our media tends to focus on the negative so much. And there's some pretty loudmouth people out there. I won't name any names, but who are like encouraging us to be unkind.
Right.
And
I think that is what, even with an invisible thread, it hits a chord. It really brings home how one small act of kindness can make an enormous difference. Maurice and I never could have imagined when we first met that our friendship would have lasted almost now 30 years. And one of the things that I'm most proud about with Maurice is that he broke a cycle. And it's not so easy to break those cycles. People might think that it is. It's really not. When you have your mentors that are drug addicts or drug dealers, you know, it's pretty hard.
Yeah.
And his children will never know from drugs and violence and from hunger. There are today 1 in 5 children that are still hunger deprived like Maurice. And so a portion of the proceeds from an invisible thread actually go to Share Our Strength, No Kid Hungry, which is an amazing organization that's trying to put an end to childhood hunger. But,
you know, people will look at that and say, well, those people should make good choices. They make bad choices. It's not that simple, is it?
It's not that simple. You know, I spoke to someone the other day, and it was a radio interview, and they said children don't wake up and say, you know what, I'm really happy that I am homeless and that I'm hungry. You know, it's like they don't ask for that life. They've been given that life, and they're doing the best they possibly can to survive in a life, you know. And unfortunately, sometimes, too, I was the first person Maurice ever knew that worked.
Wow.
The first person at 11 years old. He didn't have one person in his life that worked. So those cycles are hard. And Monica, you are right. I do believe that one of the reasons why an invisible thread has done well is because people are hungry for good information. And, you know, there's two things. You know, I say to Maurice all the time that we do have to count our blessings because there's so much goodness that is happening in the world. And it is unfortunate that we're not focusing on it. But for some reason, out of this pile of incredible goodness, our story was kind of like plucked off the top. And we're able to share it. But I also said in my original book, An Invisible Thread, that if you have your own invisible thread story, share it with me.
Mm.
And I have compiled some of the most beautiful invisible thread stories from other people of how they too have had their own invisible thread connection. The name of the book, An Invisible Thread, is an ancient Chinese proverb. An invisible thread connects those that are destined to meet, regardless of time, place, and circumstance. The thread may stretch or tangle, but it will never break. And, you know, it really does depict.
So, Laura, are you going to publish this compilation of other people's invisible thread stories?
Yes.
Oh, wonderful. Tell us about that.
Well, it's a little bit too soon to say, but it's something that is absolutely in the works, and I'm hoping that in the next month or so we'll be able to really talk about it. But it will be a compilation of other people's beautiful invisible thread stories. And I've been collecting them for 4 years now, people writing in and just saying, I've got my own. And I had a woman write to me, and she said to me, thank you for sharing your story with me. I have an invisible thread connection in my life, but I never knew that we were meant to be, that the name of your book actually gave my relationship, my friendship, a definition.
You know, I've got an invisible thread story, too.
You do?
I do. I do. About 20, almost exactly 20 years ago, I met a young man who was, I had been married for 19 years and I had just, my marriage had just ended, and I met a young man who was 11 years younger than me, who was as different from me as you could possibly imagine. And, you know, I live in a small town, Iowa's not very diverse. This was a young African-American man whose family had been the first black family to own farmland in Southeast Iowa, I believe, many, many years ago. Anyway, somehow we had this connection that out of it came, we ended up founding a company that now employs almost 50 people in Iowa.
Wow. Did you send me the story?
I will. Yes. Yeah. It's just...
Would you send it to me?
I will send it to you. I will send it to you. And here's the thing that's really that people are really find amazing. We had actually met when he was 4 and I was 15.
No.
Yes. I worked at an ice cream stand here in town, and he used to come and buy ice cream cones with silver dollars that his father gave him. And I would take the silver dollars out of the till and put a paper dollar in, and I had kept those silver dollars. And many years later, after we reconnected, and I realized that he was that little boy who used to come and buy the ice cream cones, I gave him back the silver dollars.
You gave him back?
Yes.
Oh, Monica, you have to. I'm going to call you when we're done.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh my goodness! And you know what? It is an invisible thread connection. He was meant to come into your life, and you were meant to be in his life. And I absolutely believe that when I met Maurice, you know,
yeah,
I was focused on work. I definitely will always be focused on work. I mean, it's part of my DNA. My parents too were very, very hard workers, but. I absolutely believe that Maurice was meant to be in my life, and the name of the book.
How did you become familiar with that proverb?
Well, that's another kind of crazy story, and it seems like every time I needed help from my mother, she's been there. Every name that I came up with, Alex didn't like, and vice versa. And I had to go to a birthday party, and I was rushing. And I had never bought a card in Duane Reade. I just liked to go to my local card store. And because I was rushing, I ran downstairs to Duane Reade, which is kind of like a CVS or Walgreens.
Okay.
And I picked up a card. It was the first card I picked up, and it said, "There's an old saying, how an invisible thread connects those that are destined to meet." And I thought, wow, that's amazing. And I opened up the card, and it said, "And I'm so happy you're in my life, and happy birthday." And I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." And there were 5 cards. I bought them all. I bought a card for my friend. I ran upstairs. I Googled an invisible thread and found out about it being an ancient Chinese proverb.
Oh.
I called Alex, and I said to him, "Oh, my God." I said, "Alex," I said, "I've got the name of the book." I said, "Google an invisible thread," and he did.
Wow.
And he said to me, "Oh, my God," he said, "Laura, you are brilliant." I said, "Alex," I said, "I am looking at an American greetings card."
What
and
a
that's
wonderful
how we
song.
Came up with the name.
Wow.
Yeah.
You're listening to Writer's Voices with Monica and Caroline, and our guest today is Laura Schroff, the author of An Invisible Thread and An Invisible Thread Christmas Story, which is a wonderful book for children, and I will be passing on the copy that I have to my grandchildren for Christmas this year. And I know they're going to love it.
Thank you so much. In fact, I have created these very sweet Kindness Bear stickers.
Oh.
So when we get off the phone, too, if we can just reconnect, if you can give me their names, I'll put some Kindness Bear stickers in the mail so you can have them a little bit more personalized for the book.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah,
wonderful.
They're really, I mean, people, you know, always say, you know, oh, God, I wish I could get you a copy of my book. So I created the Kindness Bear it's the Kindness Bear sticker that's in the illustration of the book.
Mm.
So I just put the child's name on it, and then I sign it so the book can be a little
wonderful.
Bit more personalized for those people that live in Iowa.
Awesome. Now, Laura, I'm wondering how Maurice has dealt with all the attention that must have come from this, from your book.
You know,
book.
I have to honestly say it's been up and down. You know, both Maurice, first of all, never thought, like my sister Annette, that the book would ever get sold. That was a big surprise. And, you know, he had put his childhood in a... He tucked it away.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for him to have to kind of put it out there on the forefront. And I get that because I, too, came from a volatile childhood. You know, my father, you know, when he was great. But unfortunately, when my father drank, his darkest demons came out. And he would become violent with my mother and my poor younger brother, Frank. And it was really hard all of a sudden to put that side of my life out there, because that is in the original book.
Mm.
It's not at all in the children's book.
Right.
So it is hard when, you know, you've got a book out there and your life story is out there. But he's very proud of it, and he loves being a partner in the book. And we're going to be speaking on Monday at his son Jamed, he's 8 years old, his school. And that will be a very, very, very special day for Jamed, because here's this book, and it's about his dad.
Oh.
And in fact, we're going to be on Fox and Friends tomorrow, which is also. So, you know, there's been some ups and downs, but again, we both feel enormously blessed. Jamed is so excited for his dad. And for me, and of course his mother, Michelle, will be there too, to come to his school. I mean, it's a pretty cool thing to have a book about.
Oh, yeah.
And
Maurice...
talk about show and tell.
Yeah, really. Now, Maurice has quite a large family, doesn't he?
Yes. He actually has 7 children.
Oh, my
goodness. His children are enormously proud of the book.
Oh.
Children did not know about Maurice's childhood, really. They knew of me, but they never quite really, really understood how I really came into Maurice's life, because they didn't really know all of the background. So it wasn't until the book was coming out that Maurice really even had to share with his children how hard his childhood was.
Wow. Now, Laura, you mentioned that Maurice and your sister were both shocked that the book even got sold. Tell us how you found your publisher and how that happened for you.
You know,
and I know your mom had your mother must have had something to do with it.
My mother has had something to do with it all. It's really incredible. Let me backtrack for a second. Alex and I worked on a proposal together, and the proposal was an overview of the book, the story. There were 20 snippet chapters. There was an overview of me, an overview of Alex, and then 2 sample chapters. That actually went to our literary agent, and the name of the company is Dupree & Miller. And Alex had written a couple of other books. Alex and I actually have our own invisible thread connection, because we worked at People Magazine for over 17 years together, but he was on the edit side and I was on the advertising side. And during that time, there was church and state, so I never even had met Alex, and it wasn't until someone introduced me to Alex that I was able to ask him about being, you know, working with me on this project. So he actually had an agent, and he sent it to Dupree & Miller.
Okay.
And we got an email 3 days later, extraordinary story, absolutely love it, I'll be in touch. And by the end of the week, we had a literary agent.
Whoa!
I know. I mean, it was crazy. And they then waited for the summer to be over, and I guess it was in early October, mid-October, they finally started sending it out to book publishers, and the book got sold, I mean, almost immediately.
So you had already written it before you tried to get an agent?
Yes. And then after the book was actually sold, that's when we went back to the drawing board with everything that I had written, and we, you know, Alex helped, you know, really take it to another level. He's
okay.
A beautiful, beautiful writer. In fact, okay. He has now, since An Invisible Thread has come out, 4 New York Times bestsellers.
Oh, wow. What kind of books does he usually write?
Well, you know, here's the crazy thing. Alex wrote for People magazine for 17 years. He wrote human interest stories.
So you
would have thought that he would have thought about writing human interest stories, but it never dawned on him. My book was the first human interest story he ever wrote. I can't even believe I'm having brain failure, but it was a pretty big one. If you Google him, you'll see it.
I will.
I'm sorry, I'm having brain failure.
That
but he also
funny.
Just recently, he wrote Waking Up in Heaven, and that's been a New York Times bestseller. And that's an interesting story because the woman Crystal McVeigh, read my book, and she approached me. I try to respond to all of the emails that I receive. It is pretty hard. But for some reason, we just kind of stayed in touch. And probably 6 months later, she asked if I would help her. And I told her I was really too busy, but that I would speak to Alex. And she actually had died for 9 minutes and went to heaven.
Wow.
So I called Alex and I told him about Crystal and I said, you should help her with this book. And he was like, do a book on heaven? I'm like, you can do it. I said, Alex, I'm telling you. I said, heaven is hot. people want to know about heaven.
And I'm looking at Amazon, and it looks like they have another book coming out in 2016,
yes.
Chasing
yes.
Heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah. And some of his other books, Prepared for a Purpose, the inspiring true story of how one woman saved an Atlantis school under siege. Oh, that was an amazing thing, wasn't it? And again, she responded to this violent person with kindness.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And prevented a disaster. That was Antoinette Tough. And then he also wrote When Life Gives You Lemons, Stories of People Overcoming Adversity.
Mm-hmm. He did a Tiger Woods book.
Tiger Virtues.
Yep.
Yep.
But An Invisible Thread was really the first real human interest story that he wrote.
Wow.
And I'm like, how did you not know to write human interest stories? He said, it never dawned on me. So, you know, again,
So, Laura, you're working on this compilation now, and you also spend a lot of time speaking.
Yeah.
In schools and other, you know, did you ever think you wanted to be a public speaker?
You know, it's really interesting. I spent my life in sales, but in sales it was really much more 1, 2, 3, you know, maybe even sometimes even as many as 10 people. Public speaking scared me to death. And I've had to work really, really, really hard at it. And I love it. I love talking about An Invisible Thread. I love incorporating an organization into my speech and why I'm there. And again, it's something I never could have imagined. And
well, you really have had quite a second act.
You know what? I'm 64 years old, and I have to tell you, I can't get over it because I had a pretty, you know,
You took early retirement, and then you've had this wonderful second career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know. And what's so interesting, when I got out of high school, all of my friends went off to college, and I went into the working world because the thought of going to college was just like I struggled through school. And I actually, I guess a couple of years ago, it was really funny, I got inducted into the Walt Whitman Hall of Fame, which was my high school, and a bunch of my high school friends came, and they were like, are you kidding? You were like the biggest loser in high school, and you're the one that's getting inducted now into the Walt Whitman Hall of Fame. I mean, again, that to me, that was like an amazing honor.
Wow.
I spoke in 2014 at LeaderCast, which was pretty amazing, and the theme of it was Beyond You, and it was leaders that go beyond themselves. And I mean, I actually went to Florida and met with this woman, Linda, that I work with, and we locked ourselves in a hotel room for 2 days, and I just pounded that speech out over and over and over again.
Wow.
So I'm always enormously prepared. But I followed Archbishop Desmond Tutu. Talk about pressure.
Oh, my goodness.
There were 8,000 people in the room and 120,000 people around the world. I mean, there was no room to make a mistake. So, I mean, for months I practiced and practiced and practiced. So, you know, usually I am overly prepared, but it gives me the security that I need.
You know, it's very funny because when you called me this morning when I was unprepared, and I was actually in the middle of writing a comment on a Facebook post where I was saying, it was a friend who was talking about how even though she's met a lot of mean, unkind people, she still has so much belief in the kindness of humanity, and she always wants to give people the benefit of the doubt. And I was responding, you know, encouraging her to continue to keep her faith in humanity. And I said, kindness, the kind people are the lucky ones, because unkindness can't make anyone with a healthy psyche happy. It makes them miserable when they behave unkindly. So people who behave kindly are the lucky ones. And
Monica, you're so right.
And you really are the living proof of that.
Well, I don't know about that, but I can't imagine going through life and not wanting to be nice.
I know. How miserable would that be?
It makes no sense to me.
Yeah.
And, you know, when, you know, Dr. Atkins really talked about how, you know, kindness is contagious. It really is. It makes you feel good, you know, and it does make you want to do it over and over again. And it is a blessing, and it is very sad for people who
have trouble with that. Yeah, absolutely. Well, Laura, we're out of time, and I know you've got another interview to do. You're a very busy woman. I want to thank you so much for taking the time to be with us on Writers' Voices.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I wish you, your listeners, a very Merry Christmas, a Happy Holiday, and we have to touch base because I need to get those names so I can send you kind of bear stickers.
Absolutely, and this will be being broadcast on Christmas Day. So,
Merry Christmas to everyone out there listening. Merry Christmas.
Writers' Voices with Monica and Caroline is a production of KRUU-LP 100.1 FM, produced by Monica Hadley and James Moore. Archives available on KRUUFM.com and writersvoices.com.